Land tax, stamp duty, tenants. Sure, property is great, but there are easier ways to get your passive income, sometimes with franking credits. Through ETFs or exchange-traded funds, you can buy a basket of shares in many different companies in one trade. BetaShares offers Australia's broadest range of ETFs, including income-focused funds, which aim to provide yield-hungry investors with attractive income streams. Discover the BetaShares range of ETFs and how simple they can be to invest in by going to betashares.com.au. Read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website and consider if the fund is right for you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a podcast by the Rask Group. It's for educational purposes only. So please do not make a financial, legal, investment or taxation decision based on solely what you hear in this show.
Welcome to the Australian Property Podcast.
We're on a mission to be Australia's most trusted property podcast.
I'm Owen Rask, founder of the Rask Group.
I'm Pete Wargent, author and buyer's agent.
I'm Amy Linardi, and I am a buyer's agent.
I'm Chris Bates, ex-financial planner and mortgage broker.
Together, we'll take you through every step of your property journey.
From first home buyer to decades of property investing. G'day, welcome to the Australian Property Podcast. This is our 2 cents segment, which we do every week. I'm Pete Wargent from Alan Wargent Property Buyers, and with me as ever is Chris Bates from Flint Group. G'day, Chris. How's things?
Life's good, Pete. Yeah, lots been happening here. Things are starting to slowly settle down with the work and all the launch and the merge happening over the last few weeks. And yeah, just getting ready for my daughter's birthday on Friday. So she turns 4. So and you know, the big birthday party on the weekend, so that's exciting. What's been keeping you busy?
Well, we've had a torrential downpour, 250 mils of rain.
Wow.
Overnight, so hopefully that'll bring the humidity down. Mainly a bit of golf this week and a bit of work, and yeah, been at the opticians actually over the past day or so, talking about the price of services. Gosh, it's not an inexpensive time if you need services in Australia at the moment, shall we say. So all kind of, I suppose, ties into the big economic news this week. I think the time of recording, we haven't got the national accounts, but I think all of the inputs suggest a significant slowdown in the economy. And I think the cost of money, the cost of services, the cost of goods, I think a lot of that is driving the slowdown in consumer demand. People just tightening their belts a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got some good stories to talk about today, and it's going to be interesting to see. But I was just looking at a quick check then. I mean, the likelihood is there's going to be no change to the cash rate. I mean, that's dropped a little bit over the last few weeks, actually. There was potentially people were forecasting maybe a 15, 20% chance the cash rate might even get dropped at the next RBA decision. But it looks like it's gone back the other way. So holding for longer, maybe? I don't know. What's your gut on things at
later in the year, I think. I mean, there's been some good progress. So this week, the Melbourne Institute put out its latest monthly inflation gauge, which was actually negative for February, only slightly negative. But that brings down the annual rate from 4.6% to 4%. So we're getting closer to the target, edging down there. But I think, generally speaking, the economy's held up pretty well. And I think for most developed economies, interest rate cuts are still some way out. But yeah, I think if you look at the 3-year bond yield for Australia, which is a key funding benchmark, it's about 3.7%. So I think we'll still generally be trending lower over the next year or two, but it might just take a bit of time before we actually see interest rates falling.
Yeah. And so I guess in the coming up to this week, Pete, we I think the interesting thing for us we're seeing is that, you know, there's definitely been a bit of a spike in people's appetite to sort of buy this year versus late last year. And some of the stories that we're seeing now are starting to to align with that.
Yeah, we're finding in Brisbane, you know, there's definitely, when you get a good quality property, there's definitely multiple bidder situations. We had one yesterday. We're looking at a property in Mitchelton in Brisbane. There were 10 offers, you know, so it's not for sought after properties. There's plenty of demand around. I think, as we touched on last week, it is a bit patchy. I think there's certain property types are not attracting that level of interest. But yeah, I think generally there's, I think it's just largely been driven by the very tight rental market. I think a lot of people are thinking they would rather be in the market rather than renting at the moment. And as some of the factors we've touched on before, the bank of mum and dad, investors coming back in a little bit, albeit with some trepidation, and just a general lack of stock for sale.
Yeah, absolutely. So what three are we going to do this week, Pete? Happy Sunday to everyone listening.
Yes, so three news stories this week. So firstly, we're going to take a look at the apartment trap. It's a long form piece that Nyla Sweeney did in the Australian Financial Review, saying how buying a unit these days, if you don't get it right, it might not be the right step onto the ladder for people in Sydney in particular to finally trade up to a house. So yeah, that's something we've talked about a little bit in previous episodes. I think if you buy off the plan or the wrong type of property and it doesn't appreciate, you can sort of end up stuck. And it's so important to get that first step onto the ladder right, because otherwise you may not be able to trade up later. Second news story, Tim Lawless from CoreLogic put out their monthly analytics. CoreLogic, subtle reacceleration in February 2024. So housing values actually picked up as sentiment has improved in early 2024, particularly in cities like Perth and Adelaide and Brisbane, and some solid increases in Sydney as well. And then thirdly, Michael Bleby in the AFR, building pipeline is the weakest in 12 years. So this week we got an update from the ABS on building approvals figures, and they were generally very weak. There were some bright spots. Well, basically the Gold Coast, we've seen some big tower blocks approved there. But if you look around the capital cities, the unit supply is more or less drying up. They're absolutely tanking in Sydney, Melbourne and Brisbane. Yeah, and we've seen even this week another insolvency, one of the big construction firms that was actually previously working on the Reserve Bank of Australia fit out in Sydney, has gone under after 26 years. Another 63 projects thrown into, I was going to say disarray, probably uncertainty as workmen are downing tools. So there's a massive issue there, Chris, with building supply in the dwelling pipeline. So that will be our third story. So let's kick off with this first story. So Nyla, the Finn, did a long form piece, basically around the apartment trap. And I guess the big picture here is that obviously house prices in Sydney are very high. Units are the only option for some home buyers, particularly first home buyers. And in some cases, the price growth for units just hasn't been enough or won't be enough to help people bridge the gap later on and trade up to a house. I think we've touched on previous occasions how I think since around 2017, unit prices in Sydney and Melbourne haven't really moved that much. Brisbane has seen a big surge recently, but since the previous cycle, there's been fairly flat performance, and for a lot of off-the-plan properties, negative performance. So I guess the theme here is you need to buy well as a first-time buyer, or you could risk getting stuck later on. Of course, there was some disruption from COVID as well, which saw that shift away from density. And that took some of the demand away from apartments. And of course, as we've spoken about many times, there's also quality concerns around new apartments that's putting some people off.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting with the media. There's always a story that comes out that can be the opposite to what people are expecting. I mean, there was a bit of a push that, you know, because the gap between houses and apartments is so big, unit prices are really going to, you know, boom. That's kind of one of the stories that I've seen in the media in recent weeks. But I did like this story because ultimately it's showing the opportunity cost of how buying one property versus another property has performed over the longer term. And we actually had this conversation three times last week where it was actually better for the person to upgrade their from a unit to a house rather than buying an investment property. And all three of them were thinking about buying an investment property rather than upgrading because, you know, the fear of around selling, you know, the higher interest rates was basically meaning, and they all wanted, needed to upgrade. They all had like an apartment, or they all wanted to upgrade and could upgrade. So this is one of the issues I often see with first home buyers who are getting some advice from family and parents and friends, and just get something. It's better than renting, just buy any apartment. And often I've seen them, you know, 5-6 years later go, oh, has that really been worth it? I, particularly people who bought in 2015, 2016, 2017, like they had no growth, or people who bought, you know, high density apartments in 2019 or something like that, and house prices boomed, but their apartments actually went sideways or backwards. I can think of a number of people that bought into high rise developments in, you know, Ryde or Parramatta, et cetera. And everyone else was, prices are going up through the roof, and they, even though interest rates went to 2%, they didn't go up. And so this just sort of lifts the lid. Now, all apartments aren't equal. Houses are probably a little bit more equal in terms of being land. There is, you know, good streets and bad streets, but, you know, you haven't got as many of the supply issues and more supply coming like you have in apartments. And I think there's apartments going to lots of different camps, and you go, but the higher, the bigger, lower density in more the higher end parts of the market where they're not building anymore. And if they are building, they're building them for downsizes and really expensive ones. They would have probably performed, I haven't got the numbers here, but much more like houses versus the apartments that are high density where they're building lots of them. They've been built for investors. There's building issues, haven't performed anywhere near, you know, houses. And so I think that's the real good thing about this article, is it just sort of lifts the lid and says, hang on a sec, is really buying an apartment the best option if I want to, again, end up in a house? Is that stepping stone strategy really going to work? Because, you know, that's what a lot of the baby boomers push onto the younger generation. They say, oh, just do what I did. Just buy anything and then work your way up. Like, you got to be realistic. Are you actually going to possibly going to be able to work your way up with that stepping stone? Or is that gap just going to get further away? Do you need to play things a little bit differently? And I think that's the right mindset, rather than just buying something to get on the ladder, which a lot of people perpetuate.
Yeah, I think to some degree it's a question of what you can afford and when. But yes, neither has put some figures on this by CoreLogic. So this is a direct quote from the article. Over the past 10 years, Aussie house prices rose 84.7%, while unit prices gained 40.7%. In Sydney, houses 104% versus units 47%. And it's a similar picture, especially in Melbourne, where house prices climbed 80%, while units only gained 27.5%. So if you look at it nationally, the gap between house prices and unit prices in January this year was the highest it's been, 45%. And in Sydney, it's 68%. And in Melbourne, 55%. So I think, yes, as you said, normally when you get a gap like that, you'd probably be thinking as an investor about some kind of mean reversion and that gap closing. But yeah, I think there's been some changes, I suppose, in recent times. I think, as you said, people are very twitchy about buying some of the new stuff. There's quality concerns. There was another construction subsidence this week. It wasn't on a residential block, but it's that sort of thing that puts the heebie-jeebies up people, and they get a bit twitchy about buying off the plan. Also, we've seen multiple insolvencies in the construction sector. That doesn't help either. And yeah, I think as well, it's particularly in Melbourne, it's just been such a long time between drinks for price growth for a lot of units that people have just been put off the idea generally. Now, in Brisbane, we have seen strong demand for units pick up, and I think that's just an affordability thing, especially in some of the blue chip suburbs. Now, in Brisbane, we have seen some demand triggered for unit dwelling, particularly in some of the blue chip suburbs around places like Tenerife and New Farm and West End. And I think that's been driven by affordability, or relative lack of affordability for detached housing. But it's definitely, it's patchy around the country, and you need to be a little bit careful given the wide gap between house and unit prices and the potential for getting stuck.
Yeah, an interesting point in that article was, what's the name? Luke Berry, from co-founder of developer Third Eye. So they did lots of developments. I've seen a bunch of their projects over the years. He made some really good points here. He says the overall costs have increased by 45% in the last 12 to 18 months. So a $100 million build is now spending $135 to $150 million to make it work. So where's that $50 million come from? Well, it has to get passed on to the customer, right? And that just is not making these feasibilities of these projects work. That's basically what he's saying. And so this kind of leads probably into, let's do it on our second story, Pete, around sort of housing construction. What's your thoughts on this story?
Yes, we should probably jump around. Let's do the story on the building pipeline, because this almost directly ties in, right? So this week, the ABS released the latest building approvals figures. They're pretty dismal, really. Now, of course, January is not a time when people put through a high volume of approvals. It was about 10,500, and they get seasonally adjusted. But if you just look at the trend for the past year, 162,900 dwellings over the year. And when you bear in mind that a lot of those will be knocked down rebuilds, probably around a quarter. And actually, the true picture is a lot worse than this, because this is building approvals, but stuff just isn't getting commenced. The last quarter, and these figures are months out of date now, we had about 37,000 commencements. So very, very low dwelling starts. And a lot of this is simply because with interest rates where they are, and with the cost of construction and the cost of labor and materials, the unit developments just aren't making sense. So unit approvals, outright tanking in Sydney and Melbourne. Brisbane is now trending lower again. I think the only sort of bright spot was there's been some large tower blocks developments approved on the Gold Coast. But overall, the trend for building approvals is very, very weak. And it's just way short of what's going to be needed. The government's got a 1.2 million dwellings target over 5 years, which is just it's just a non-starter at the moment. It's particularly bad in Victoria, where I think land taxes are putting people off. And this was sort of flowed through to a story from Michael Bleby in the Fin Review. New house approvals have fallen to a 12-year low as higher building and borrowing costs put off particularly buyers in New South Wales and Victoria. There's probably two parts to this. There's the new houses, which went artificially high during the pandemic and now have dropped to a 12-year low. And then unit approvals, which are just low. There's just nothing really stacking up for construction and development in Sydney and Melbourne. And that's really what drives the unit market. So this is just a massive political issue now. Resi vacancy rates have hit new lows, according to CBA. Population growth. I saw the visa grant figures for international students still running at enormously high levels. Where's everyone going to go? So, yeah, I mean, there's lots of different ways to dice up the figures, but basically it's a shit show.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what's your sort of the alternative here, Pete, is, when we've got a few years down the line, a lot of these developments that are still building right now, so you can actually drive around the city and you still see a lot of cranes in fairness. You still see a lot of projects still completing. But I think what we're saying is the pipeline is really drying up. A lot of the government big spends are starting to get cut back as well. You know, the beaches tunnel, you know, things are getting, reassessed. You know, the governments are in a lot of debt. And so then the construction industry is really pulling back. Nowhere near the $1.2 million homes that they sort of want. So do you sort of see 3 or 4 years down the line here, Pete, where we're going to go, hang on a sec, we thought it was bad in 2024, but this is a lot worse now, you know, because we've definitely underbuilt in prices. But maybe prices going up is going to be what makes these feasibilities and the prices of building might drop as well. Or do you see prices of building staying high and it's not until prices go up enough to start making feasibilities work? Or potentially this rezoning with Chris Minns in New South Wales, maybe that's going to, you know, push, you know, in areas where feasibilities do work, i.e. they can sell them for big prices. Maybe that's going to be the only solution that we can see, plus, you know, build to rent.
I think, markets have a way of sorting this stuff out. And I think eventually we'll probably find that these are around the cycle lows for building approvals and things will start to pick up. And it won't be one thing. It'll be a combination of factors, lower interest rates, higher prices. We're seeing the return of foreign buyers into the market, particularly notable, more Chinese buyers around again. So that's another factor. But basically, yes, just the cost of construction coming down a little bit and the cost of borrowing coming down. We'll see. But there's definitely demand in terms of the number of people, just headcount. Just probably a variety of things as prices begin to rise for new units. We'll start to make sense again. And I think as well, in the meantime, we'll probably see the bottom for rental vacancy rates is people just have a way of jostling around and working this stuff out. There'll probably be more use of share housing. I think more people will stay with parents for longer. So if the rental market becomes sufficiently unattractive, people look at different ways around it. Mm. I think we'll hopefully find that this is around the cycle low for dwelling approvals. But it's particularly bad at the moment. I think in the context of very high population growth, and it is a bit visual as well, there's some parts of Greater Brisbane now where, you know, there's actual homelessness and tents and, the notice boards are absolutely full of people looking for a rental accommodation on an urgent basis. So, yeah, it's a hot political issue, and I think it'll be all hands to the pump to try and get this sorted out now.
Yeah, I think it's going to be something that we're going to keep talking about. The developments are just not happening. And I do think the budget's only a couple of months away. Maybe we're going to have to see some intervention here. And maybe the governments and state governments are going to have to put their hands in their pocket to start to make these projects stack up. Maybe they cut development taxes. Maybe they do something that's a bit drastic that they haven't done before, because, there needs some solutions out there. And I don't think the attack on investors, there's been a bit of it's the investors are a problem, right? Well, investors are actually going to solve part of our housing crisis, right? So if investors keep bailing and they're not really driving the market, and so changes to taxes like negative gearing and capital gains tax, probably not the right time when you've got a rental crisis. So, yeah, what do you think there, Pete? Do you think any major budget changes are on the cards?
I think it's being debated a lot. I don't know if it's a great time to be disincentivizing investors at the moment. I think the latest RBA figures show there's a bit of a dichotomy here, because new lending to investors is picking up, but actually there's still a lot of investors selling as well. A lot of the stock that we're seeing come onto the market is either tenanted or has been a rental property. And if you look at credit growth on a net basis to investors, it's still very, very low. It's about 0.2% each month. So although there are more investors coming back into the market, particularly in Sydney and New South Wales, there's still a lot of people selling as well. So it's not a great time, I think, when you've got a rental crisis to be looking at ways to sort of squeeze the property investor cohort again. It's already been an issue in Victoria with land taxes. There's been changes to tenancy rights and things like that. So I think there'll be a push, and it'll largely come from the Greens and possibly some of the other parties. But at the moment, anyway, I don't know that negative gearing and capital gains tax are going to get reformed just at the moment. I just think rental vacancies are record lows. You're playing with fire a little bit there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just have to wait and see. I think it's a big topic, but if it does get a bit more airways, I think we'll cover that in a future episode. So, Pete, what should we hit this third story? I think I was kind of not forecasting this. I don't really like to do that, but we had lots of conversations in November time saying, this time can surprise people. And at the time, we saw a lot of CoreLogic in particular was saying the housing market's really running out of steam. Prices are really starting to turn over. This boom sort of slowed down. We don't see much price growth in 2024. That was sort of the rhetoric that was, getting perpetuated out there. I was looking at our clients and what our clients were doing and saying, I just don't see that be the case. I actually see that if we get some better news around inflation and rates aren't likely to potentially get cut next year, I think there's going to be another kick in the market. And I can't see stock levels really increasing just because it's just impossible to really upgrade at the moment. So yeah, investors will still bail, but that's usually not where a lot of home buyers want to buy. And so I could already sort of see coming into February, listings will disappoint again, like they have multiple times for many years now. And demand will pick up like it always does in January, where you get buyers re-entering the market because they've been looking for many years, and all of a sudden they're like, oh, actually, I don't want to miss out if the market sort of jumps. And we're starting to see Feb, numbers starting to look better again, Pete.
Yeah, so CoreLogic ran with their monthly home value index 1st of March. Housing values record a subtle re-acceleration in February. Sentiment improved. So this is by Tim Lawless at CoreLogic. Housing values posted a broad-based rise in February, with the home value index up 0.6% in February, and that's up from 0.4% in January. Now, if you look at the component parts there, Sydney 0.5%, Melbourne was fairly flat, Brisbane 0.9%, Adelaide 1.1%. So it's a double-digit growth for Brisbane and Adelaide and Sydney over the past year. But Perth is the standout, 1.8% over the month, 18.3% capital growth over the year to February. Now, at the time of recording, we don't have the benefit, Chris, of knowing the GDP figures or the national accounts. By the time this goes to air, those figures will be out. And I'm guessing, looking at all of the inputs and the partials, we can see it's going to be pretty soft. But just one thing that stood out to me looking this week, just some of the ABS releases that don't get much coverage. I was looking at mineral exploration. So now very quietly, during the mining boom, we heard all about, you know, every quarter there was a record high, and then Deloitte would say we're near the peak of the mining boom, and then it would just carry on and on. Now this time around, since 2015, when we saw the lows for mineral exploration, it's just gone up and up and up. And now over $1 billion per quarter is being invested in mineral exploration through the last part of 2023. Now, when you break that down on a state basis, it's good for Queensland, but it's epically good for Western Australia and the economy in WA over the next couple of years. Usually, money spent on mineral exploration is a precursor to investment in mining. And some of it, there was a record drive for gold exploration a couple of years ago. But in recent times, it's been driven by a couple of things. Firstly, a renewed expansion for the bulk commodity. So that's iron ore and coal, and to some degree, LNG and copper as well. But in particular, the global demand for base metals. So now we all know WA is a very cyclical economy. And I remember talking to you, Chris, on a podcast some years back saying, you know, who the hell knows what's going to happen in Perth, but at some point there's going to be another boom. It could be over, it could be in 10 years, it could be in five, we just don't know. It looks like it's now really is here. And we've got all of these geopolitical issues around the world. The mining industry understands those very, very well. And the demand for base metals, copper, of course, all of our bulk commodities for China. This is all massive news for WA. Company profits was one of the figures that got reported this week. Over the year, extremely high for Australia, $556 billion. So 2 years now of just enormous profits. But it's worth noting nearly all of that is really driven by the increase in mining. The mining profits touched $300 billion in 2022. So I think in the mining boom, we knew all about this, Chris. This time around, it doesn't seem to get the same kind of coverage, I guess, because it's almost like an echo boom from the resources construction boom a dozen years ago. But it's boom time for Perth anyway. And all of these figures for mining and exploration and exports, I mean, it's all going to be a big part of that news story for WA over the next few years.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess that's great for the Perth economy. I would just be a little bit hesitant, you know, rushing out to buy investment properties over there. And this is not my anti-Perth, et cetera. If you're buying into the more established housing markets where people who are living in Perth who are doing really well financially and who are benefiting from this mining boom, they're upgrading, grading within. However, what I think happens in Perth is people go there for affordability, they go there for cash flow, and there's been a huge increase in investors going to Perth. I mean, that's been, if you look at their lending proportion for investors is quite high, you know, compared to what it has been in the past. And what you're saying is that's going to, so people are going over there for investment properties. Now, do people leave their money in Perth long term, or do they put it over there when they make some growth? Do they bring it back? And so, you know, money can flow there. Does money flow back? And I think a lot of investors who are buying over there actually are future home buyers in the East Coast. And so what they're doing is they're going, well, I need to get my money to work for me because I don't want to buy an apartment in Sydney, but I do want to buy something to live in a few years' time. And so they go and buy an investment property over there because they're looking for just a short-term return on that money. And so my worry would be that if, you know, those returns aren't there or people decide to just take their money and run, then all of a sudden you see this real retreat. So you just got to be careful whenever you're buying in an area where a lot of other investors are buying. You want to leave that party before everyone else leaves the party, because that growth that you thought you had could very quickly evaporate if you miss it by a few months' time. And so, yeah, just be conscious of that. I do think there's this, you know, markets that are getting artificially inflated because there's a real mini investor boom that are coming from the East Coast. those markets you want to sort of pull out before everyone else decides to run.
I do remember that somebody who was previously a resident of Darwin during the boom years, it was all anyone was talking about was the price of housing. Every single person seemed to have a new Prado. There was nothing available to rent. And yeah, and it went on for longer and it went higher and longer than people ever believed possible. But then we had a decade where really nothing happened. And actually, that was one of the points that was highlighted by Tim at CoreLogic. A trend that seems to be more certain going forward is the sheer diversity in market conditions that is emerging through 2023 and 2024. Hobart dwelling values are down 12.2% on their 2022 highs. So not every market is in an uptrend at the moment. Yeah, Darwin relatively weak as well. Canberra, of course, came off the back of a massive boom. So slightly different market there. But just a few of the other factors there. An acceleration in rental trends was also seen. Rental price growth up 8.5% in February, up from 8.1% in January. So I guess, yeah, Tim says the sort of improvement in consumer spirits has largely been driven by the improved inflation outlook. But rental would definitely be something that needs watching by the RBA because there's a real rental shortage and it just hasn't improved. Housing turnover is tracking at a similar level, I guess, to the five-year average, maybe slightly below and better than where it was a year ago, but still not back to full speed. And yeah, I guess just generally a slightly more positive shift in the market conditions than might have been expected, say, in September or October last year.
Yeah, so I think that's probably enough for the Fed figures, but let's just see how this plays out, you know, over the next month or two. I'm actually seeing, you know, a lot of the poorer properties, things that have been on the market, that's always a good sign to show that there's a bit of depth in buyers when the older stock starts to shift. And I think that's happening a little bit as well because people are getting a little bit disappointed with what's come on the market in Feb. And then they're thinking, hang on a sec, I don't want to miss out. And then the older stock that's maybe the vendors are meeting the market because they want to get a, you know, actually sell so they can go and buy something else. So there's a bit of vendors meeting the market, but it's also a lot of sometimes buyers willing to meet what the vendors want who have been overpricing it for some time. And so I think that's a good thing to watch. And SQM have some great data on older listings if you want to check out your postcode and your area to see what's actually happening with the older listings in your suburb. But yeah, I think, you know, all of a sudden it could be May again, right, Pete? So it's this periods in the market go really fast. And you know, we're already sort of a month into the auction, so the autumn sort of part of the market, and then it dries up again in winter. And so, as time goes on, that pent-up demand starts to enter the market, particularly if that news around rates gets much stronger. Rate cuts are really imminent. And if APRA or some issues around borrowing capacity start to, you know, come more and more of the discussion, and then all of a sudden APRA cut assessment rates or banks do some more innovation, all of a sudden borrowing capacities are going up. The tax cuts aren't that far away too, right, Pete? So that's only, you know, 4 months now. It's crazy. So, you know, all these things can start to really increase confidence. Consumer confidence has come off all-time lows as well, Pete. I think we covered that last week. That's another good sign that, you know, momentum's picking up.
I think if we were trying to weave a common theme through these three stories, well, there's a very chronic shortage of dwellings building up. And there's been a re-acceleration in the market, the rental market, but also now for prices. But just be aware that, yes, not all apartments are created equal. I think FOMO is a dangerous emotion whenever it comes to any financial decision, particularly as an investor, but also as a first home buyer or a home buyer. So and just a point that you've reiterated so many times over the years, Chris, try to make it be decisive, but be really clear on what your strategy is and try and focus on quality because it's really hard to unpick bad decisions in the property market. It's much easier in more liquid assets, but if you buy the wrong property or get the structure wrong or use the wrong type of mortgage or whatever it may be, it's much harder to undo those mistakes. So yes, there may well be some FOMO building up in the market, but you've got to be really clear on what your strategy is.
Absolutely. I think it's patience and persistence the key in any market. But yeah, and sometimes you haven't got that opportunity. So I think it's actually a good time to be in the market when you are looking right now, because you know that everyone's not rushing to buy anything at any price. And so, but if you are a pre-approved buyer, you make the offers, you know, you then I think you can actually get a deal done. It's that can very quickly go on people though. All of a sudden they think they've got time, they don't think there's any urgency, and bang, all of a sudden the price jump happens and people go, actually, I wish I would have bought about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And markets can move much faster in shorter time frames than people expect. And so yeah, just be always conscious of the conditions you're buying in. And you know, you're never going to get that perfect time, because ultimately when the perfect time is, you probably don't want to buy, right? It's when there's real fear on the market. And so, yeah, just be careful with that at the moment, I would say as well.
One final point, Chris, I'll throw a question at you. It seems to be that Victoria is the sort of epicenter of this collapse in the pipeline. There's not much getting approved. Apartment approvals have just dropped off a cliff for Greater Melbourne. I think the combination of reasons, I guess, the, you know, like all the factors that have impacted everywhere else. We've also got some higher land taxes to contend with in Victoria. I think some landlords have been put off the state by the land taxes and some of the sort of anti-landlord legislation, if you will. Any tips for people looking at Victoria and Melbourne? I guess there's two sides to that story, right? I guess there's the short-term challenges, but then there's also going to be record population growth and it looks like a massive shortage of housing.
I think if you can play in the housing market, and I do think Melbourne's going to get its mojo back, and I'd say the city's getting busier, that return to work, the office, the cafes, the restaurants, the tourism behind Melbourne would be increasing. And so ultimately, I do think the housing market down there will be really strong. I think the roads will be getting busier. It's getting clogged up. It's, you know, and people will naturally want space down there. There is that desire for that sort of house and that beautiful frontage down there. I do think ultimately the planning controls will stay really relaxed down there. And so, you know, along the busier roads in Melbourne, I think they'll just continue to build apartments for fun. I do think the apartments over the next two decades are going to be way better than the apartments we built over the last two decades. And so, you know, I do think that will give more options to people to sell out of the housing market. But I think people are going to live in their houses for longer. The parents are going to stay in their houses. The kids are, you know, are going to want to keep them in their houses. And so turnover rates will stay really low. There'll be tightly held suburbs. You know, the population, the desire for housing in around the city will stay really strong. I think it's counter-cyclical. You could have some arguments that somewhere down the Mornington Peninsula and other markets that are really struggling right now could be better buying than trying to buy in around the city where the momentum's back being close to the city because of the return to work. So, but ultimately, be a brave bet to bet against the Melbourne housing market. And just due to the being a mega city, doing really tight, hard to get around, people ultimately wanting to get to the city for work and being closer to the city is really valuable to people on higher incomes if they want to get homes to their families. And so I think it's kind of going to be a return to what was driving the market pre-COVID is sort of back driving the market again, I would say.
It does make sense. Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes people get mired too much in short-term thinking, but like a lot of these things, this too shall pass. So, Chris, I let you crack on with the rest of your weekend. Have a great Sunday, everybody. Always great to chat, Chris, and look forward to seeing you again next week.
See you next week, Pete. Happy Sunday.
Thanks for tuning in to the Australian Property Podcast.
If you love the show, why not subscribe or leave us a review on Apple or Spotify?
And if you want to work with me, Amy, Pete, or Chris,
you'll find links in your podcast player to get in contact with us.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Australian Property Podcast. We're huge advocates of getting the right advice at the right time from the right people. That's why it's important to understand that this podcast episode contained general financial information only. It is not designed to be specific or personalized to your financial, tax, or legal situation. With property, the check sizes are pretty big, so it's important you get advice from a licensed and trusted professional before acting on the information you hear in RASC podcasts. Thanks again for listening.
For more than a decade, I've been hunting for the best investors and their methods, strategies, and tools for investing. After years in the industry, countless books, a few degrees, and 1,000 podcasts and live shows, I've rolled this accumulated knowledge into something called Rask Invest. If you've ever heard me talk about a core and a satellite, active and passive, true long-term compounding, or you simply want to know exactly how I would invest, now is your chance. Rask Invest is our new investment service, designed for all types of investors who want professional management of their core portfolio at a low cost from a team they trust. Rask Invest helps you automate your wealth creation and passive income. Simply click the link that says Invest with Owen in your podcast player to join one of our live platform walkthroughs or book a call with us. You can also view the Rask Invest PDS and TMD and get invested with me.